All right, everybody, welcome back. Bio Bros, episode 10. Sorry for the delay. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice at all, but I was sick and we had to miss another week. Sorry about that. I felt terrible. So I'm back now. So today we're doing a species, not species, genus spotlight on Felsuma or the day geckos. So I'll start off as usual with a tiny bit of history. And then I'm going to let Alex do a lot of this stuff. He's been getting into them a ton, pretty sharp on them nowadays. So they originated in the late Cretaceous to Eocene period, so like 70 to 30 million years ago-ish. We don't necessarily know exactly fossil record and all that is quite the disaster trying to determine really specific stuff. But about 30 million years ago is what we would recognize as Felsuma for sure. That's when they kind of came up. This is a big genus. There's 53 species plus like 20-ish subspecies, so about 70 if you're including all those subspecies. They range in the South Pacific to the east coast of Africa, Madagascar, with the exception of, oh, sorry, I lost my spot here and I need to read it because I'll mispronounce it. Adamantse, so which are from their name. If you watched our episode on Latin basics, they're from the Andaman Islands, and they're not from that region. But there's introduced populations in Hawaii, Florida Keys, and a couple other places with similar climate to that. And then this is our last bit of history here for the moment. Is they're first officially described in 1825 by John Edward Gray, who named it after Dutch physician Merck van Velsum. So there's your quick little bit of backlog of these geckos, where they came from. A little bit of that. All right, now Alex, take us over to the actual interesting stuff.
No, the history is definitely interesting, but I actually didn't know where they that all that stuff either until tonight when we were researching it and everything. But Felsuma, they're a really cool genus. And like Shaw said, I'm starting to try to work with them more. I currently breed Felsuma grandis, and I'm wanting to get into more species and diversify, and also really wanting to get into like the less common species of Felsuma in the hobby. So like the really common species you'll see in the hobby are Felsuma grandis, aka the Madagascar giant day gecko, or a lot of people say the Geico gecko because that would be a perfect example of Felsuma grandis. Then there's Felsuma klemmeri, or the neon day gecko, which is a pretty common one. Felsuma standingii, which is the standing's day gecko, is another really common one. But they're a really cool species that are not species, Jesus. They're a really cool genus of geckos that a lot of the species come from like Madagascar and that area that Shaw had said, but the majority being from the Madagascar and the islands around them, hence the Madagascar giant day gecko name. But what I've learned working with them, if you are into lizards that you can't exactly touch and hold, but that have like that next level of intelligence, Felsuma might be a species for you. And when I say that next level of intelligence, it's what I'm talking about. Shaw and I were talking about earlier that I'll be cleaning in the room where my trio of Felsuma grandis are, and they'll just be going around the tank, and I'll just be watching them. If I move, they will watch me. They actively will watch what is going on outside of the tank, not just each other, but they'll watch my dogs go by, watch other people go by, watch me go by. They're actively paying attention to their surroundings, and like not just in a predator prey type way. They're watching you and interested in what is happening, because they will also, if you go up, sometimes they'll come up to the glass because they're just curious. They're like, what's going on? As soon as you open the glass, they'll run. But that's just Felsuma for you. They tend to be a very fast and flighty species, or not species, genus in general. They're very, very fast. And they are a genus of geckos that can climb glass and walls and will climb and go straight up to the ceiling when they get out because they enjoy being a pain in the butt to catch. But going back to the intelligence, another perfect example is that whenever I go to feed my trio, my male Felsuma grandis, Juan, he and my female Rosa, every time they see the crickets, they know what's happening. They see the cup, they know what's happening. And they're like getting excited, ready to go after the food. But they don't go after the crickets specifically most of the time, because they know I tongue feed a lot of times. So instead of going after the cup that's in my hand, a lot of times they will wait. As soon as they see the silver, they go for that shiny silver, and ready for food off of that, instead of going after my hands, or like the cup that they're sitting in. They've learned that they know the silver tongs means food, and they will chase those all throughout the cage. And if you have anything else silver, obviously they'll chase that because they think it's the food tongs. But there's just a really cool intelligence genus, especially the grandis. And there's a wide range of sizes as well, so like, so not everyone can afford to keep like grandis, the species grandis, which my male is anywhere between 10 and 12 inches currently, my females being between 8 and 10 inches each. They're in a 4 foot by 2 foot by 2 foot enclosure currently. I'm actually probably going to upgrade them eventually to an even taller enclosure just because they enjoy the arboreal height. And I would like to do theirs better for breeding and things like that. But there's other species like the line day geckos or gold dust day geckos, which they only get as adults maybe 6-7 inches, and that's a big gecko for that species. So there's a wide range in between them, the biggest being like Standingii and the grandis, and some of the smaller ones being the gold dust day geckos or Clemerae or things like that.
Yeah, they're super cool. Definitely very interesting species. The day gecko, common name, you know, it means they're out in the day, they're diurnal, so that's why you get to observe a lot of those behaviors. Not to say that they're, not to like undercut what Alex is saying about the intelligence. I believe a lot of lizards are very intelligent, but they don't ever get a chance to show it off because they're nocturnal. So you guys aren't familiar with each other, they haven't learned routines like that or anything, where these day geckos really get to. So they're super cool, they're a little more interactive. Like Alex was saying though too, about like handleability, not very good.
No.
Their skin is very thin in general, they're very flighty. I remember a while back Alex sent a video of one of his that had gotten out during just maintenance, and it was like on the ceiling of his house. It was quite the disaster. So be careful when you're opening the glass of the tanks, they might want to jump out on you. But they're so they get that chance to show it, and not very handleability. Not very handleable, sorry about that one, but they are out and about, seen, see them. So I think of them more like fish. I try to think of reptiles that you can't really hold, or amphibians, as fish, where you're not trying to hold them. You're not, it's not like a blue tongue skink or a ball python where you mainly get it to be your friend and hold it. These are like fish. They're just pretty, right? You just look at them, you observe their behaviors. They're pretty. You make a nice tank for them and it's sweet. That's another thing that's really cool with them, is the tanks. They come from areas in the world that are naturally very pretty and favorable for growing a lot of the plants we enjoy, so their vivariums can look really, really cool. And they're mostly non-destructive, so you can keep more delicate plants with them and they won't destroy them. So you can have a really pretty display with really pretty animals that are actually out in the daytime. Super cool.
Yeah, they... just a really cool diurnal species, like Shaw was saying. Them being out during the day is another reason that I'm really much more wanting to get into Felsuma. I think they're also an underrepresented genus in the hobby, to be honest. They're starting to gain more popularity, but everyone knows of the Grandis in the hobby and some of the smaller ones like the lion day geckos and the peacock and the gold dust. Those are very common known species. But like I was saying earlier, I want to do some less common species and get more into the captive breeding populations and things like that. On top of that being just getting them out there so people can see them, because there's some absolutely stunning species. Like Felsuma sepidiana is a very, very pretty species. Its common name is the blue-tailed day gecko. Neon blues and greens, and they're just so vibrantly colored. Another one is Felsuma bourbonica, which is from the Reunion Islands. And then Felsuma ornata is another one that is, it's high reds, high blues, vibrant blues, vibrant greens. They're a beautiful display animal. And not like what you're saying with that and that intelligence stuff, you not only get an awesome display animal, but you get to see them, interact with them, and have them recognize you. You're feeding things, like you're feeding tongs, you're feeding cups, things like that. Or when you're putting in their Rapashi or Pangea food mix, they recognize that and know what it is and know to go down there. And another cool thing, some of them you can actually, instead of having to handle them, you can get them to where they'll eat Rapashi, like if you're holding a little cup right out of your hands, which I can do with my male and female. My male Juan and my female Rosa, those two I can feed by hand. But back to the talking about how they're not very handleable, another big thing with Felsuma that makes them less handleable is if they do bolt, if you grab them, they have an actual defense mechanism where their skin will just peel off. And you'll just see patches of skin just gone. It'll look like a naked little lizard with no scales on it. And it's designed to be able to squeeze out of your hand. So you can't grab them, per se, if they start to get away or anything like that. Which is another reason why it's really just not worth trying to hold them. Some people can get, like, Grandis and stuff to where they'll climb onto their hand and stuff and they can hold them. But that comes with time and with knowledge and with knowing how to handle skittish animals and knowing how to gain their trust. It's not really a thing for beginners and not something I'd recommend for somebody who's just getting into the genus, just because there is more likely a chance of them getting injured when you're trying to hold them. And okay, so...
And I would add on that one too, like, these are small lizards. The biggest ones get are still under a foot. And even the largest species is unfortunately now extinct. Gigas, so Felsuma gigas, or giant, is now extinct. And so we're dealing with the smaller lizards. Like, they're under a foot long, with some of them only being a couple inches long. They're not big, so their bones and everything are really small. It's easy to accidentally hurt them in all sorts of ways. So, again, think of them like fish, not like dogs, right? You're going to look at them, they're going to be pretty. When you do maintenance in the tank and stuff, just be aware. You know, adjust your surroundings, make sure you're not getting pinched with the door, make sure they're not lined up to jump straight out. Get all that stuff done, and then I think you're good.
Yeah, and they're not super bad about running out of the tank. Most of the time, if my male or one of my females have come out of the tank, it's my own fault. Or if I'm trying to catch them to move them to another tank or something like that, then they've ran out of the tank. Or just I spooked them out. Again, my own fault. Most of the time, they are more likely to just go, nope, and run back into the tank to a hiding spot so you can't bother them, then run out of the tank. And
yeah, you're big and scary. They don't want to get near you, right? You're going to win that fight every time. They'd way rather run into a familiar hiding spot and try to go towards you, given the option. So that's not something to be paranoid about. It's just a thing that can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, same scenario happened with my bearded dragon. She got, not very long ago, she got excited. I went to feed her, and she came flying right out of the tank. It's a foot and a half long lizard that came flying out. I had to hurry and catch. So it happens with every species of reptile. It just is a thing that happens. But when they're really small, when they get out, if that happens, a bit more of a disaster than when your big lizard gets out.
Yeah, them being smaller and adding lightning quick, it makes it a lot harder to catch them. Now, to get into some of their care, most Felsuma have pretty similar care. I'm just mostly going to go over Grandis today because that's what I keep, and I don't want to go over species that I don't currently keep as well as have personal experience with caring for them. So you can tailor this to most Felsuma, but this is specifically for Grandis. They like a hot spot or a basking spot in about in the 90s, mid to low 90s, or maybe even upper, just in the 90s, basically. If they're from lower to upper 90s, they like that kind of nice basking spot. They do not want it hotter than that. They're not a super hot basking spot species or even a super warm enclosure species. Most of their enclosure can be high 70s, low 80s, and they're perfectly fine. They are a tropical species, so they do enjoy a little bit of humidity and that tropical setups. So, like, best setups, personally, are bioactives, in my opinion. Putting some pieces of cork bark or some pieces of bamboo. They love bamboo. I actually have bamboo tubes in my enclosure, and that is one of their number one spots to lay eggs. Because as long as they can fit in there and it's a nice, tight, dark spot, they're going to lay eggs in there. But they like a nice humidity spike, especially as the lights are going off. Because in Madagascar, as the sun's going away, the humidity tends to spike at night. So giving them a nice spray down right before the lights go off is a good idea. They are mostly insectivores, so they'll eat all kinds of insects. Roaches, crickets, waxworms, mealworms, superworms. If it moves, they'll eat it. I've watched mine chase gnats around the tank, so if it's an insect and it moves, they will probably eat it. And then they also eat Pangaea or Rapashi or whatever name you know it as. It's basically a replacement diet that is this powder you mix with water to make kind of a paste. It's supposed to replace like the fruit and nectar that they would eat in the wild. Now, they are not a species that is going to drink from a water bowl.
Yeah, they're definitely. Their diet and stuff. It is interesting that some of them. I don't believe this goes for all species, but general rule, a lot of these guys like fruit and nectar, which is interesting. It's not all that common. You see lizards that like fruits. That's always fun, and you can get some of the larger species to hand feed, like Alex alluded to earlier. That you can get some of the larger species to hand feed the Pangaea Rapashi diet, like crested gecko diet stuff. A lot of them will try to hand feed from it.
You can also even do things like with the, especially the larger species, you can take like a little bit of banana and mash it up, or like mango and mash it up and stuff, and they'll eat that too, which is pretty cool. They definitely need UVB. because they are a diurnal species. These are a species that is out during the day, basking in natural sunlight. They need UVB. I have on mind the Arcadia Shade Dweller, because they're not a species that's going to go out like bearded dragons and bask in this high, intense UVB sunlight. They are a arboreal species, but they tend to stay in forests in Madagascar. So they'll still bask in the sunlight, but it's filtered through all the trees and things like that. So it's not that super high humidity, or not humidity, super high level UV rays like a bearded dragon or a monitor would have. So doing like a shade dweller, or I think it's 7%, or like a T5, or is it T5? Or no, not T5. 5.0 UVB bulbs is what's recommended. Just like with all other UVB animals, use the coil bulbs, use the tubes. The coil bulbs, unless they are within 2 inches of that bulb, do not produce enough UVB to be even measurable, so they're not going to get enough of that. So use the tube lights. Those actually are very good for producing UVB for the animals. And if you're planning on breeding Felsuma, leave a little dish of calcium in there on top of replacing like the repashing, things like that. You can even leave in the little trays that they have that have like magnets that stick to glass on both sides to hold them up, so you can put the repashing in one side and put calcium in another, because they will actively go there and lap up some calcium, and they'll get these little sacs on either side of their neck. It's where they store excess calcium until they lay eggs. They'll have these sacs, and then once they lay the eggs, normally the sacs kind of deplete. And that's because they've used that calcium, or they use so much calcium laying their eggs, they now need that calcium back in them for functioning.
Yeah. Especially in breeding, those eggs take up calcium. But Felsuma are, because they live in naturally humid environments. So reptile eggs, for those who might not know, are leathery and water can permeate them. So they need to be kept humid. They'll just like stick their eggs on things. They have these like kind of slightly sticky eggs, and they just deposit them in like bamboo tubes and stuff. So babies just...
I will say with Felsuma grandis, my personal experience, all of my eggs, none of them have been leathery. They're all hard-shelled. And they do, most Felsuma do stick their eggs somewhere and it sticks to glass and things like that. But grandis, their eggs tend to just stick to each other. And like if they're in the bamboo tubes or something, I can just tip the bamboo tube up and they'll slide right out. But they actually are surprisingly not leathery. They're a hard shell.
Yeah, I mean hard in comparison to like a chicken egg. Like they are, leathery is a general term as well. A lot of turtle eggs will be a little harder too. But water still permeates, so they need a humid environment. But it is kind of cool. Like they lay their eggs out in the open. Like they find a little spot that's hidden, and then they just lay an egg in this little place. They don't necessarily dig a nest or anything, which I always think is interesting, because all the species I've worked with dig nests and things. So for them to just stick an egg somewhere in the tank, and some of the species don't bother their babies at all. So you just leave the eggs in there and then collect out babies as they hatch and pop out. So that's neat too.
Yeah, that would be like Felsuma clemmeri. You can actually raise the babies with the adults. Now, Felsuma grandis, do not do that. I have had, let's just say that I have had eggs that I didn't find, and the parents got an extra snack on accident. They will predate their children. Felsuma grandis will. Basically, with Felsuma grandis, if it fits in their mouth, they will eat it.
You gotta remember, reptiles don't have the same emote that we have. not to say they don't have emotions at all, but it's not the same for them. They don't have family or friends necessarily. So for them, that their own child is just a smaller lizard. So a lot of those species will just eat their babies with no second thought. Yeah, it is best to remove the eggs on species like that, but it is a thing. But it's kind of cool, though. A lot of them, you don't necessarily, just keeping your lizards happy will result in babies showing up. Breeding just happens if you're a good keeper of your animals. Unless the male starts harassing your female too much and she starts getting worn down, then you might need to separate. But a lot of times, good husbandry, which is very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it with that, because to be honest, that's how I started breeding them. I got a trio with the intention of possibly having them breed in the long run, mostly just because I wanted them to have that natural instinct, be able to live out their natural instincts and stuff and breed and things like that. But I didn't expect it. I never found eggs and stuff at first until I started putting bamboo tubes and things like that where I could actually find the eggs and they weren't completely hiding them from me. But they just started breeding. Currently I have 5 eggs in the incubator that are all Felsuma grandis. That's another thing with them. They tend to lay their eggs in groups of 2. And they will look like the 2 eggs will be glued together. So you don't want to separate them when you're collecting eggs. Just take them together and put them in some vermiculite or perlite or whatever media you're using. Another cool thing about Felsuma grandis breeding, you don't technically need to put them in an incubator. They can incubate in room temp. Which I think is really cool, because not a lot of reptile species can you do that with, especially not tropical species. Like North American colubrids and stuff, yeah, you can do that with those eggs. But tropical, especially African or Madagascan tropical species, you really aren't normally able to just leave the eggs and have them hatch. It does take longer, a good amount longer than it would if they're in the incubator, but it is possible, and I've personally done it with at least 2 eggs, and both babies came out perfectly healthy, and they are doing great. I had a coworker buy them both, and they are both thriving to this day. But I started putting them in the incubator because, one, it makes it go or incubate faster. And 2, you can kind of control the sex of the babies depending on what temperature. So, like, I have my incubator set at 81 degrees Fahrenheit, which is right in the middle of their temp range for incubating. Much higher than that, you're going to get more males. Much lower than that, you're going to get more females. I put mine right in the middle so I can get a good mix. But they, I think it's like 60 to 70 days for incubation, or 50 to 60 days for incubation. They're not a very quick incubator. They're about average for most reptile eggs, but they just are a really cool species with incubation that you just don't have to technically incubate, which I don't know. I think that's really cool for a tropical species.
Yeah, they're very, very tough, very forgiving, really, to the grandis specifically. The more popular species that in the hobby are very, they're very tough. There's a reason they're popular, and that is the thing too. Like, their eggs, since their eggs are exposed to the elements to an extent, even in the wild, since they lay them not in nests, just around, it means they're pretty tough. Like, they're pretty good at dealing with stuff. They're hard to mess up. Some of the other reptiles out there, their eggs, you look at them funny and they rot, because they're used to being kept in these nests that are 4 or 5 feet deep in the ground, so their temperature and humidity is ultra stable. So they're hard to incubate. Felsuma, not hard at all, just based on the nature of their breeding habits and all that. And like that harder shell on there means the water content within the egg itself is going to stay more stable because less water is going to evaporate out or absorb into it. It's easy, good starter breeding animals. If you want to start getting into that, Felsuma grandis specifically, good ones.
Yeah, and they're just a really cool display species as well, with those very, very bright, very bright greens and dark reds on them. And Felsuma grandis is also this of the Felsuma. They tend to have the most traits, I guess would be the best word for them, because they're not true morphs. They're similar to how crested geckos, like we talked about before. They are mostly line bred, but they have ones like cherry heads and crimson and blue bloods. Those are all traits that are common in them. People call them morphs, but they're not true morphs. Cherry head just means there's a lot of red around the top of their head. Some of them are almost solid red, which both my females actually are cherry heads, and crimson, which crimson means there's just a lot more red splotching on the back and like even down to their tail and stuff. My male is just a straight normal Felsuma grandis, which they still have red on their face and a little on their head, and then they have like, he probably has 6 spots on his back of red. But when you get to the crimson, their back looks like a Dalmatian but red. And then blue blood just tends to be a Felsuma grandis that has a lot of blue in it. Some of them are almost solid blue, some of them are just a much higher amount of blue than normal. And then they actually have patternless ones as well. So there's just no red splotching on them at all. They're just a solid green Felsuma grandis. So those are, this like the most common species and has had the most breeding and like attention to traits and things like that. So if you're looking for maybe not the stereotypical, just normal Felsuma or grandis or Felsuma in general, you can look more into grandis because they have those line traits that they're bred for a lot.
Yeah, so I think that puts a pretty good wrap on everything for the most part. Obviously, this is the entire genus spotlight, not as much the species. So without getting ultra specific into the individual species, I think we covered about everything, really. A recap on this, a very old and diverse genus of diurnal geckos. Very cool. Usually smaller, mostly insectivores, eat some fruit, nectar too. Super, super neat, cute little dudes. They very pretty lizards. Grandis is going to be that Geico gecko that everyone's seen. Super cool. And the one we kind of used as base. Like, you can make a lot of assumptions about the genus based on Grandis. They're very middle of the road as far as everything goes with them, except for size. They're big. Yeah, that's about it. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Instagram, do all that. And if you made it this far, leave a comment. We want to know who you are if you're making it this deep into the show.
See y'all next week.